Call to order, municipality of the District of St. Mary's Committee of the Whole Meeting. Today is Wednesday, May 6, 2026. It is 5:01 PM. Can I have roll call, please?
Warden Fuller.
Here.
Deputy Warden Malloy.
Here.
Counselor Beaver.
Regrets.
Counselor O'Connell.
Here.
Counselor Thibault.
Here.
Also in chambers tonight is CAO Leslie McFarland, Director of Finance and Treasurer, now Marion Fraser, Janelle Fleet, Municipal Clerk, and Teddy Stevens, our Director of Public Works. Before you, you have the agenda for tonight's meeting. Are there any additions to the agenda? Hearing none, can I have a motion that the agenda be approved? Counselor O'Connell.
I'll second it.
Counselor Thibault, all those in favor?
Aye.
The agenda is approved. Before you have the minutes of the Committee of the Whole Meeting held Wednesday, April 15th, 2026, are there any errors or omissions to the minutes as presented? Hearing none, those minutes are approved. Are there any business arising from the minutes? Hearing none, we'll move to number seven. Response from the Minister of Public Works regarding the paving of J-class roads received on March 24th, 2026. These are the roads that we ask for just about every year. And just as every year, the Department of Public Works will not be paving Cameron Road, Bennett's Loop, and Restoration Drive. But we're free to resubmit them next year. Also before you, you have correspondence from Ross McDonald, who is our municipal advisor with the province. He is going from another position, and Jeremy Martell from Lewisdale, Richmond County, will be taking over his municipal advisor role starting May 7th, tomorrow, and working within an office within the region. So there's his information there. That is it for correspondence. Moves us to number eight, which is a presentation from Everwind Update and Community Open Houses. And if you don't mind, just push the little left-hand button there until it lights up. There you go. And if you'd be so kind as to introduce yourselves, then we'll go around and tell you where we're from.
Great. Thanks, Warden. So my name is Mark Stewart. I have been in this chamber before, presenting to previous council as well as staff. So appreciate Warden, counselors, staff for having us in again for this update. And my role is Director of Engagement with Everwind.
And my name is Tyler DeGeer. It's my first time meeting council here, so thanks very much. I'm a senior development manager with Everwind, essentially the project manager for our Wind Farm 3 project and our phase 2 build out. I'm a professional engineer in the province of Nova Scotia and really excited to present on our project here.
Start over here.
So, well, I'm the counselor for District 1, which is Liscum to Newchester. So that's that way. I don't know if you know where that is, but yeah.
Hi, I'm Dan O'Connell, counselor for District 2, which is Sherbrooke, Wine Harbor, Sonora, and Golden.
And James Fuller, I'm also counselor for District 5, which is Goshen, Country Harbor, Denver, piece of Fisher's Mill, and Caledonia, and Garden of Eden Barrens. Mm-hmm. It's not highly populated.
Yep. Hi, I'm Beulah Malloy, and my district is 3, and it starts in Fisherman's Harbor and comes all the way through to Jordanville, some of the little places in between. Thank you, Mark, for answering that letter that I was CC'd on.
Mm-hmm. I'll get back to them one.
Thank you.
Yeah. Not here is Counselor Beaver, and he's Glen Hill and
Waternish.
Yeah. And
some Stillwater.
You have down to Stillwater and we have a lot of area for 5 of us.
Yes. Yeah.
he sends his regrets. He had another event tonight and he had to flip a coin.
And just to know, we will be presenting to the River Association tomorrow night, so.
Oh, good.
I'm CEO of Leslie McFarland. Very nice to have you here with us. Thank you.
Take it away.
Great. Well, I'll start. And what we're going to present tonight are essentially the same slides that we'll go through at the open houses. And our intention here is just to provide council with a broad update. So we're going to go through these pretty quickly because there are quite a few of them, and knowing that we do have 15 minutes and you have other agenda items. But we really want to open it up for questions afterwards. And certainly we invite everyone to come out to the open houses that we have over the next few days. So we're in Pembroke tonight. We're in Country Harbour tomorrow through the daytime. Before and then Port Becker and more night. So the presentation that we'll go through really will focus on what we call Wind Farm 3. We're hopeful by the end of these open houses that we'll have a new name. And you can see as we go through the presentation tonight, there'll be some options on the screen, and certainly we're open to feedback from council as well as the community on those. And our Wind Farm 3 is a component of the broader build out that we have in Guysborough County. So the municipality of the District of St. Mary's, as well as municipality and District of Guysborough, ODG. And we'll kind of provide an overview of the three components, three wind sites, as well as the other components on that, and then we'll talk specifically to what we call Wind Farm 3. I think it is worth kind of stating right from the start that these projects will have an equity component and an involvement of a Mi'kmaq consortium. And the Mi'kmaq consortium is led by Member 2. They've been a partner with Everwind since Everwind set up in Nova Scotia in 2022, and has really been a key leader in our development. The photo that you see behind you there, for those of you that may know, is Chief Jerry Paul. He's been the chief at Member 2 for over 40 years and really is an inspiration and quite an amazing leader. So it's been a pleasure to have partnered with Member 2 and their development team to work on both our phase one and phase two projects. If you could go to the next slide. Just about a little quickly about Everwind. We did talk a bit more at length last time about who Everwind is, but a quick overview is we are an Atlantic Canadian company. As you can see here, the staff that you see on there are part of a number of teams. So this is the wind team that you're looking at here. Myself, Tyler, as well as a number of our other colleagues will be at the open houses, form part of that wind team. I'm from Antigonish County, grew up in Antigonish County, and spent a lot of my life living away, but I've been fortunate to come back and live in Antigonish County to work on projects like this. And we have a number of members of the team that are Nova Scotians and that have come back or kind of working here. So our terminal that is based in Point Tupper has around 100 staff there, and then our development team in Halifax that are based out of Halifax has about 25. So that forms Everwind now. If you go to the next slide, this is a facility that you see. So just for context, we're looking over the Strait of Canso, pretty much due east into Richmond County there at the Point Tupper Industrial Park. And so the facility that Everwind purchased there was previously owned by NuStar and has 38 storage tanks, and the gem of which is that beautiful dock that goes out into the Strait of Canso. So it has enabled us to leverage existing assets to build out our kind of green fuels and industrials hub infrastructure. So we run as a transshipment facility today. So those 38 storage tanks are leased by various companies, and products come in and out. Last year in 2025, we had 170 vessels coming in and out. And it's kind of that was a good year. Kind of in 2011, 2012, there was at a peak about 300 plus vessels coming in and out of the site. And it is very strategic asset for Canada on the East Coast. And so what you can see to the, like, really, I guess, the bottom of Lake Landry is existing infrastructure. Up in that kind of right-hand side is the proposed build-out of our industrial hub. And if we go to the next slide, what's enabling our development are our phase one and phase two projects. So Everwind has been actively developing since 2022, phase one and phase two. So our phase one sites consist of four wind projects throughout Nova Scotia. We have the furthest one kind of to the left, like looking in the southwest, Bear Lake. It's on the border of West Hants, Chester, HRM. That's our smallest wind site, 88 megawatt site, 11 turbines. And then we have two sites in Colchester, which is our largest as part of our phase one, Windy Ridge and Gemitnook together, with 63 turbines, 504 megawatts. And then Upper Afton is split between Antigonish County and Guysborough County, or MODG. And they consist of our four phase one wind sites. They will be grid connected, so meaning we'll connect into Nova Scotia Power Grid, and then we'll offtake that energy in Point Tupper at our industrial hub there. There's some benefits to doing it that way. It enables us to support Nova Scotia and the Nova Scotia grid at times when the grid needs it most. So Nova Scotia grid is at kind of peak demand through the middle of winter, when typically our projects are producing the highest in terms of, you know, it's the highest wind speeds at that time of year. And so that energy from those sites can be utilized on the grid, in particular at times when the grid needs it most. So it enables us to balance that peak load of the grid by, we'll have what's called an interrupter clause in our agreement with Nova Scotia Power. So we would interrupt the production or the use of that power on site to divert it to the grid at times when, you know, domestic needs are high. So that's typically for home heating through the coldest parts of the winter. And then at times when there's surplus energy, we could take that off. So it means that less energy is being curtailed or not used on the grid. So there's some benefits. However, with our phase two projects in the scale to which we are developing those, they will not be grid connected for the challenges that exist with connecting those sites. And those are the three sites that we see throughout Guysborough County. So the first one, which was previously called Wind Farm 1 when I was in here, is now called Setabooktook. And that is kind of the closest one to Point Tupper in the Strait of Canso. It's located kind of in the area of kind of Mulgrave, Sandpoint, St. Francis Harbour, Boylston, Lincolnville area. Wind Farm 2, which is now called Ocean Lake Wind Project, is located in the kind of around the communities of Larry's River, New Harbour, Goldborough, and kind of Erinville to the north. And then obviously the one that we're here speaking to today is Wind Farm 3, and that's in the communities, you know, of that we kind of discussed, kind of going from Deputy Warden's communities of Fisherman's Harbour, kind of in that area, and then moving through to Warden Fillers, kind of Country Harbour, and then across. And you'll see kind of in detail when we pull that up in the next map. I'll probably hand over to you to talk about phase two projects.
Okay, so yeah, this is our phase two sites in a little bit more granular detail. You know, as Mark mentioned, you know, phase one is the first to go to construction. Phase one is the green energy to get the Point Tupper green energy hub up and running. Phase two, it provides more energy to build it out, scale it up, right? So in terms of construction, you know, the phasing will go the Canso Strait high voltage crossing first, along with the Setabooktook Wind Farm 1 project in the northeast that you see there, then followed by the Ocean Lake Wind Project kind of in the center, and then Wind Farm 3 that you see down towards the southwest, so constructed in sequence. So we're here today to talk about the Wind Farm 3 project. Each of these three wind farms is predominantly Crown land. The province, through a competitive kind of RFI process, awarded these lands for development to Everwind several years ago. And you see there in the Wind Farm 3 area, that pink area, these are the Crown lands that were, you know, awarded to Everwind for development. you can see here that, you know, we have through our iterative kind of wind project siting process, we've identified the best areas for wind based on resource, based on community use, based on other kind of valued environmental components. And you can see that we're focusing the project down towards the south and east of the area, or kind of staying out of the St. Mary's River watershed area. Let's go to the next slide. This one's going to show the wind farm 3 area in a little bit more detail here. So last time we were doing open houses in the area here, we were just kind of presenting, this is the general area that we're looking to develop wind, and we're looking to develop this kind of size of a project. We've now got to the point that we're able to say, here are the specific locations that we want to build turbines. Here's where we anticipate roads. You know, there's still a lot of unknowns with these projects. This is a world-class, you know, project. It's going to take a couple more years to actually get this to the point that we're ready to construct. And part of that process is doing more environmental surveys, getting community input, kind of iterating it to find that kind of the best project, you know, possible. So we can we've got some maps that we can at the open house tonight that we can provide you with. Actually, you probably have some in your packets there, but we have other maps as well. But let's talk about how we have come up with this site layout. So to start off with, you focus on we've sized the project to kind of fit the land area and the resource that we have here. So the capacity of the project is 856 megawatts. So this is kind of equivalent to the engine in your car, right? And the distance you drive is then like equivalent to the energy that it'll produce, right? So this is what's called the power nameplate capacity of the project. And this is also the nameplate capacity that's going to drive things like municipal revenues and community benefits funding as well, right? The ownership is, you know, Everwind with a member 2 led Indigenous consortium. The project involves up to 107 turbines. Each turbine is 8 megawatts. So 107 turbines times 8 megawatts, that's where you arrive at 856 megawatt total project capacity. Each one of these turbines is approximately 221 meters tall. That consists of a hub, or a tower, and then the hub sitting at approximately 130 meters, and then 91 meter blades. And as Mark already mentioned, you know, we're kind of bounded by the areas of Country Harbor, Stormont, Port Bickerton, Port Hillford, Indian Harbor Lake, and Melrose. So we started the project development back in 2013 with the start of 2023 with the start of environmental field studies. We in 2024 we established a community benefits agreement with MODG. We'll be looking to establish a similar one with St. Mary's under this, you know, a similar structure in the, you know, coming year or two. We've held some open houses already, just kind of presenting some generalities about the project. We're here, for today and tomorrow in kind of surrounding communities to get into some of the more specifics. 2025, we installed a wind measurement tower to actually, you know, properly measure the wind resource in the area. We'd expect to do some more wind measurement in the coming years as well. We've done Mi'kmaq ecological knowledge study since then. Continued our environmental field assessment work, and that brings us to where we're able to present the project to the public and then register our environmental assessment. We'll get into what the environmental assessment entails in a couple more slides here. Coming up in future years, we see 2027 as the launch of our community liaison committee, which we made up of members of the community to help advise us of how we can improve the project. 2029, that's where we anticipate getting municipal permits. By this point, we've gone through most of our engineering, we've refined the site layout, we're ready to apply for municipal permits, hold like pre-construction job fairs, for instance, and set up a community benefits program, and then target construction start in 2030. The construction start would start with tree clearing, then move into civil construction, then into turbine installation, going out to around 2034. Okay, so how's the wind project sited? Well, first off, you start with where there's good wind. It's pretty good wind today, isn't it? Right? Is it always this windy?
Should have been back in our backyard. Oh, yeah,
perfect. That's what we want to hear, right?
So I had to go find our lawn furniture and put it away.
I mean, why is this project the size it is? It's because Guysborough County has world-class wind resource. And that's why we're building a world-class, wind project here too, right? This project really is, it'll be one of the leading projects in Canada. It's really going to establish Guysborough County as a leader in Canada and even on the world scale in terms of renewable energy development. So that's the first thing we look for when citing a wind project, right? Then we look for land and terrain. So you need to have, you don't necessarily want to build on a mountain, right? You want hot areas of high elevation, but you want relatively flat areas where you can actually construct turbines, and roads have to be of a certain grade to be able to haul, components of up to 70 tons, on these. So that's all going to impact where we put turbines. The environmental studies is very strongly impact where these go. We stay away from kind of sensitive ecological features, species at risk, for instance. Turbines are cited to work within regulations for setbacks from houses and roads and water courses, for instance, as well. And then, of course, avoiding archaeological sites that we may find. We do both desktop and field surveys looking for archaeological sites, and then community input as well, which is where these open houses and meeting with yourselves is very useful for us, right? Because we want this to be the best wind site, not just for energy production, but for the community as well. Next slide, please. There we go. So what we've got to now is we are just about ready to file for our environmental assessment for review by the province. So the EA helps us make sure that we look at, it's a very granular document, very granular process, and make sure that we look at all these kind of valued components. So the document's going to include project site information, just like what you see here, these maps, right? But it's also going to present the outcome of Indigenous and public engagement sessions, methods and results from the environmental studies we performed, mitigations that we will apply to reduce the impact of the environment. Like any project, wind projects do have impacts. They have a lot less impacts than a lot of other kind of extractive resources, but there are still impacts. So we've proposed mitigations, and we look at what are those kind of those post-mitigation, adverse effects on the environment, right? So we're kind of presenting as much information as we can possibly present to the, to yourselves and to the public to weigh the, to demonstrate the pros and cons of these projects, of which we think that, the pros strongly outweigh the cons, of course. So as part of this, the EA process, we register the document. This becomes publicly available for people to read and scrutinize, and there's 40 days to submit comments. The EA is also reviewed by a variety of provincial and federal organizations to provide comment. And eventually it comes down to a ministerial decision by the Minister of Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change. But this is just the first, permit that we would need to be able to continue this project forward. There is a variety of other permits and permission that we need to take this forward to construction as well. So among the environmental studies we performed, we don't have time, but we've looked at birds and bats, aquatic environments, terrestrial wildlife such as moose and wood turtle, terrestrial habitats for rare species, atmospheric environment, that includes your sound modeling and your shadow flicker monitoring, geophysical environment, looking at things like impact to groundwater, possible impact to from blasting in terms of people's proximity to people's wells, for instance. Cultural and heritage sites, so Mi'kmaq ecological knowledge studies and looking for archaeological remnants and the impact on the social and economic environment. So this is about about a 300-400 page document that looks at all these different components in very granular detail. In terms of the environmental monitoring, again, this is the environmental assessment is just the first permission that we have. And if we are successful with this and we're approved, this is going to come with about 40 or 50 conditions, right? A lot of this is for further environmental monitoring as we continue through construction and operation as well. Right. So in terms of the local benefits, Mark, do you want to?
Sure, I'm happy to speak to the next few slides. So these ones typically are ones that municipal councillors are very interested in, as they do speak to the direct benefits for the municipalities. One of the good things that is in place in Nova Scotia is a effectively a wind turbine tax for municipalities based on where the projects are sited. So if there is a turbine that is located within the District of St. Mary's, then there's associated revenues that go directly to the municipality, and that's the $7.4 million per year in annual municipal taxes. And that's based off that 864 megawatt site. What, like, the one thing I just want to make really clear today is that that number will change, because as we go through this iterative development process, the number of turbines will change. So currently we're looking at 107, which gives you 8 megawatt machines. That's what gives you that number, but that will change. And that's why there's a little note on the bottom there that based on that 856. We're a disclaimer, right? But we are targeting, you know, there is very good wind in this site. So we are targeting kind of in excess of you know, 800 megawatts, I think would be pretty safe to say. And so that does mean that there's still going to be significant municipal tax revenue. Currently, the way that the project is laid out, it is obviously there's the municipal line that you can see in the maps that comes through the site. And it's about 60-40 at the moment, with 40% of the turbines located in the municipality of the District of St. Mary's. And so currently on those numbers, you're looking at kind of in that vicinity of $3 million annually in index stuff over the life of the project. And so we are looking at a 35-year project life. So it's, you know, it's good sustained revenue for municipalities over the life of the project without a lot of, without really any services from the municipality in terms of, you know, associated costs. Like there's, you know, there's no municipal water or you know, garbage or road clearing or any of those, some of those other things where there's costs associated with it. So we see it obviously as a clear benefit to the municipality through that. If you go to the next slide, we speak to kind of, I guess, the additional job creation and economic opportunities are one of the, again, from my perspective, as having grown up in rural Nova Scotia, one of the nice things about wind sites is that they have to be located in rural Nova Scotia. And so what that means is the associated jobs with them come to the rural areas and not necessarily the city. So you can see that the numbers are significant through construction. And so we expect obviously that there will be, you know, challenges with meeting those locally. And so there will need to be, you know, additional people and support pulled in from other areas, but they will still create opportunities for local people and local businesses to be a part of that. And we've seen that on wind sites and, you know, throughout the region and Canada. But it's the operational jobs that go for 35 years that are, they're the people that will live beside these sites. They will go, like, their operation and maintenance building will be on the wind site. So they'll turn up to work every day on the wind project and work on the project. And those are really the people that will end up, you know, they are the ones living in the communities surrounding the project. And we see that again on all the wind sites. And that's just for this project. So if we look across the three wind sites that we're proposing as part of our phase two build out in the area, it's 100 plus kind of operational roles with that. So, you know, there's a great opportunity for those staff, in particular with Wind Farm 2 being very close, to reside kind of in your municipality as well. Because you know, that site will be up kind of in behind, access will be behind Goldboro, really, or there'll be a number of different access points, but that will be one of them. And so, you know, areas like Country Harbour are not far from that access point. So there are significant both construction as well as operation jobs in terms of direct jobs, but then there's also the indirect and induced benefits from that. Just to the next slide. One of the key components of all of our projects is this community liaison committee. And we see this as kind of an essential element to our project development, because it is the committee that both serves as a way that we can disseminate information to communities and to areas, but also that we get feedback in from communities on a pretty granular level, where we'll go through looking at the layouts, and we'll go through talking about how we're going to do different things. And it becomes, you know, equally as important through construction when we're working out component delivery disruptions to you know, communities, and having components coming through. So it is a very important element to our projects, and will live on for the life of the project, because one of the other key roles with it, and we'll get to that in the next slide, is the recommendations for the community benefit fund. So if we go to the next slide here, one of the key components that we've agreed to on our wind sites is to enter into binding community benefits agreements with local municipalities. And that's what, you know, Tyler was alluding to on the previous slide. And the value we see in this is that obviously it will live on with the project rather than, you know, with you know, everyone or whoever it may be at a time. There's no intention for it not to be everyone, but it is a binding agreement with the project. And it also puts into a formal legal agreement for the community benefit funds, which are a voluntary payment that the project in Everwind are making associated with these community benefits agreements. So we've committed to $1,000 a megawatt. And so obviously with this 856 megawatt site at current capacity, that would be $856,000 paid annually into the community benefits. And so that really is proximity payments. So it was living in closest proximity to the site, bursaries, which we're initiating right now, obviously at a smaller level, but with local schools, and then community vibrancy fund. And the community vibrancy fund is really where the CLC will advise the allocation of those funds. And we see those as being areas that the community determines are important. So it could be community halls, it could be local organizations. It's really up to the discretion of those on the committee to determine, but there will be, you know, significant monetary values in that, and that they are reoccurring every year. So you can leverage funding with those. So we see them as obviously one of the additional benefits that we're establishing, and with programs like the Wind Turbine Technician Program now offered at NSCC in the Strait area, there are people that can train right, you know, within an hour from here, an hour plus, and be opportunities for 35 years. We're getting to the end here. One of the key components that will come up, obviously, in our discussions with communities, with municipalities, is what happens at the end of the life. And there, what we're seeing right now, there's really two options. So one option that's, I would say, the most common option right now is to repower the site. And why I say it's the most common is because I think everyone's aware that the demand for power just continues to go up. And so with a lot of the associated infrastructure in place at the end of a project's 20, 25, 35 year life, what companies are deciding to do is to repower that site. So update the technology that's being used there, but use the existing collector system, interconnection lines, everything, and then keep the site running.
Foundation, turbine towers, things like that. You generally replace the generator sitting on, you know, in the cell, or maybe the blades that have had the material fatigue, for instance, but
Everything else can be kind of maintained and continue. But then if there is a decision not to continue with the site, there would be a decommissioning. And that's where we would remove all components from the site, including digging down a meter at the foundation locations. And the reason why the entire foundation is not removed is it will effectively create more harm at that point in time. So we would clear down sort of 3 feet, and then reclaim the land in that area, and that would be the same with lay down areas if they're still in place, as well as potentially some reclaiming of roads and other related infrastructure on the site. And then the last kind of key slide here is what I was talking about right at the start, is that we are looking for a better name than Wind Farm 3. We feel like that doesn't have a great ring to it, and these are some of the options that have been proposed. We are still open to other options, and the idea is that we'll have some stickers on hand at the open houses to try to gauge public feedback on it. And I do believe that brings us to the end.
Thank you both. And I will point out that, let's go a few pages back here to 2024 for say community benefits.
Yep.
That is one of the priorities of council right now,
okay,
because we are being a rural municipality with limited avenues of funding. We are looking to make sure that all our community activities and programs at our community halls, our fire departments, you name it, are able to continue at a service level that benefits everyone. So you'll be hearing from our CAO.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a pen in hand.
Yeah.
To work out something that I think will benefit everybody, and you know, your vision, which I realize we have to share it.
Yeah.
I like it. And as far as other questions go,
just to address the community benefits agreement. So it's typically tied to when we're producing.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, this is the probably the last project of our phase two build out to actually reach production. It's just, this is just in terms of geographical, you know, distance to the site. That said, we're still investing in the community in that period as well.
We're yes, you helped out during the drought. We know.
Yeah.
But we don't want to wait till last minute.
Yeah.
That's great. I keep going on. Now, I know other folks have questions, and you'll be at the open house along with the rest of your staff. And if it's something we can buttonhole you there, that would be, unless there's something pressing.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go there and get snacks.
Yeah. One quick question. And first of all, thank you for the very informative presentation. Concerning community benefits agreement and the bursary fund, targeting the O&M phase in 2034, you're looking at a range of folks in 50 to 30 part-time, full-time employees. My question is, are you recruiting through the high schools? Do you have an active recruiting program that goes to the high schools to say, hey, this is us, we're creating jobs. This is a great place to be. One of the biggest things that we try to achieve, and Mark, you know this from a rural community perspective, keeping your young here, and it's so vitally important. So my question is, do you have an active program to the high schools? I know you're saying you have bursaries, but do you have a sort of educational, hey, this is us, we really want you on board, and this is what we can offer you?
I'm just going to speak really loud.
Turn one off.
Oh,
to turn the other one on.
Right.
And then it should work. There you
go. Thanks. That's a great question. It's something that I've been very interested in since I started. And we have, we've established a CLC at our terminal site since 2022. And one of our key members on that CLC is the warden of Richmond County, but in her previous role to that, she was the principal of Richmond Academy. And so she takes a very passionate educator's lens to her involvement. And so through that, we've been very active in local high schools. So what we've been doing, so we've presented to all the senior students at St. Mary's in, I think 2024 was the time, was when we had them all in to Guysborough Academy, and we had all three schools. So we had Canso, Guysborough, and St. Mary's all in, and provided an overview of really not just everyone, but like emerging green technology and opportunities in the Strait area with a number of projects. And then in addition to that, we've been delivering site tours. So our facility in Point Tupper, we've had over 600 students through that site over the last 2 years, talking about current opportunities, but really focusing on future opportunities. And with that, we're now kind of moving ahead with, I guess, trying to attract students into renewable energy trades or university degrees. So we've committed to a $5,000 bursary at St. Mary's for this year for students that indicate interest in renewable energy. So one option obviously is wind turbine technician program, which we'd be very happy to support, but we don't want to limit it to that. And so have, you know, if students are interested in environmental studies or engineering or can be a number of different disciplines, we're looking at setting up, well, there's five bursaries within the Strait area to support students with that up to 25,000 this year. So we're looking at a number of different, from the education side to supporting with the funding side of things. Is again, we're very interested in keeping young people, but just people in general in the areas where we're developing the projects. Okay. But any further advice or strategies to get in the schools or ways that we can do that, we're certainly open to feedback as well.
I can imagine Lois would happy to that.
Oh yeah, she's great.
All right, that's terrific. We'll be up to see you soon.
Cool. Wonderful. All right, again, thanks for the opportunity to come in and present, and we look forward to seeing you in the community and then furthering the conversations.
Terrific.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll be out there.
Won't you part with the cookies?
Yeah. Well, I'm willing to bet there might be some up there.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Very much.
Thank you.
See you in a bit. Okay, that brings us to number 9, and it's a couple staff reports, public works truck. Is that you, Teddy, or is that Leslie?
It would be me.
Okay.
In the committee of the whole meeting on April 1st, 2026, staff would direct the council to return detailed cost estimates to support the decision on the purchase of a new public works truck. The approved municipal 2026-27 capital budget includes $55,000 for this purchase. On April 10th, 2026, the tender was posted for the procurement of a public works truck, as certain specifications were asked within that. As for the tender documents, the criteria for assessing the responses to the tender were overall suitability, delivery time, and purchase price. The highest scoring response was for the F-150 regular cab truck at $55,000 plus HST. This is an all-inclusive price. The total price to the municipality, including non-recoverable HST, would be $57,121.57. Pending approval, insurance will be obtained for any staff who may be required to drive a vehicle. The municipal vehicle use policy was approved by council on April 1st, 2025.
So you have a recommendation?
I do. Recommend that council approve the purchase of the F-150 regular cab truck from Highland Ford at a price of $55,000 plus HST. It will be funded through the 2026-27 capital budget.
Have a recommendation on the floor?
I'll make.
Cool. Okay.
Let me hear them.
Deputy Warden Malloy and then Councilor O'Connell. Both in a rush. Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Recommendation is approved that we purchase the F-150 regular cab truck from Highland Ford at a price of $55,000 plus HST to be funded through the 26-27 capital budget. Thank you, Teddy. Next is Teddy. Westside Water Main Replacement Design.
Okay. The west side water main was installed in the 1970s and is still all original infrastructure. Over the past 3 years, Sherbrooke Water Utility has suffered 5 major leak events within this portion of the system. The latest event was a series event which took place in late January 26th, resulting in the whole west side being without water for extended periods of time. A capital project to design a replacement for the west side water main is included in the municipality's approved 26-27 capital budget in the amount of $60,000. The staff report requests approval to award the design contract to Straight Engineering Limited. The west side water main serves critical infrastructure such as the hospital, RCMP, Department of Transportation, Storybook Day Home, various businesses, and many residents. The west side also provides one of the greatest opportunities for growth and expansion within our community. The feasibility study, which was completed by Straight Engineering Limited in July of 25, stated the capacity is the greatest hurdle for growth within our community. Due to past leak events, it's determined that the greatest risk of preventing growth is the unreliability of the west side water main and distribution system. Because of the age of the infrastructure, it's been determined that the replacement of the west side water main is essential for community growth and to be able to provide quality and reliable water to critical customers. In light of the criticality of this work, a 3-year project has been initiated to design and replace the west side water main. The design phase is included in the municipality's 26-27 approved capital program. The scope of work of the Housing Accelerator Fund program has been changed from installing a water tower to designing and replacing the west side water main, providing a source of funds for this major initiative. This project will be completed in a 3-phase approach. The first phase of this project will take place in 2026 and will consist of having an engineer design completed. Once this is completed, the work is anticipated to be put to tender for a 2-year approach. Phase 2 is planned to take place in the spring of 27 and will consist of having the west side water main replaced from Clover Farm parking lot across the main bridge and down to the St. Mary's Memorial Hospital. Final phase is planned to be from the shutoff valves on the west side of the bridge, replacing the remaining infrastructure. A quote was requested from Straight Engineering Limited, who hold the municipality's 3-year service agreement for engineering services. Straight Engineering Limited provided a quote for the design and provision of tender-ready documents for the 2 final phases of the project, the replacement of the west side water main. The quoted price for the design is $30,875 plus HST, which is within the amount of $60,000 allocated in the 26-27 capital budget for the design project from the HAF program. Water utility capital projects with a value over $250,000 require prior approval from the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board. The deliverables from the 26-27 phase of this project will enable the municipality to submit the required documentation to the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board to request approval of the capital program.
Anybody have a question about the staff report?
Yeah, I do. So it says that the water utility capital project over $250,000 needs to be approved. So before, does this Straight Engineering design need to be before you ask for approval or after? Like, do you need this done first, I guess?
Yes, the first phase of the project would be having the design. With the design, they'll have cost estimates related to the phased approach.
And so with the costing that we're about to get from this phase, then we could submit what we need to get the NSURB approval to go ahead with the actual project to do the installation. We need this because we don't know what amount it will be, and then we need to get that in and get that approved so that we can go ahead and do the actual work, because it's almost certainly going to be over that sort of limit.
Is that fully funded through the HAF grant program?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilor Goff.
Yeah, Teddy, on the extension, you indicate that the project goes across the bridge and down Hospital Road. Does it go up further to Department of Highways Lions Hall or down Cameron Road as well?
That's the two-phase approach. The first phase will be across the bridge and down as far as the hospital. The third phase will be from the end of the bridge up to the motel, Cameron Road, Venice Loop, that area.
There's no more questions. Teddy, do you have a recommendation?
Recommend the council award the design of the West Side Water Main Replacement to Straight Engineering Limited at a cost of $30,875 plus HST to be funded through the 26-27 capital budget from the Housing Accelerator Fund grant program.
I'll make that motion.
Councilor Tebow.
Second.
And Councilor O'Connell. All those in favor?
Aye.
Recommendation is approved. Next is the Low Carbon Communities Project, and I guess that would be you, Leslie.
Thanks, Warden. Yes, so this is a project we've been speaking about for some time, and this is one of the projects we're doing through our Clean Foundation arrangements. And we're in year three now of our Clean Foundation arrangements. So this project's scope has varied over the years. It was originally called a large-scale solar feasibility study project. And it's actually using grant funding that came through the Department of Energy with the province. And it the scope has varied. And with recent budget pressures, we have refocused scope on this to shift to mitigating immediate energy expenses as a high priority. And we have over $38,000 budgeted this year for just RecPlex power bills alone. So we're really going to be focusing this on the RecPlex and how we can bring down our utility costs associated with RecPlex. So with that direction to the Clean Foundation, we were able to revise the scope of this project. And you see an attached document there that's from Clean on how we will proceed on this project. And we are actually able to leverage, with an investment of $7,500 from the municipality, we're able to leverage over 90% of the remaining funding needed to obtain strong recommendations and a path forward regarding how we can bring those costs down to operate the RecPlex. So that will be completed by late summer, and that will allow us to do proper budgeting for next year. They're also going to be identifying grant funding and other funding sources so that we'll be able to apply for those and hopefully fund some of this work to actually be implemented in the coming years. So the approach that we've taken, given staffing shortages and many, many priorities that we have underway, but yet wanting to take advantage and really maximize the value of this grant funding, is that Clean has agreed to actually put in significant funding, more funding than the municipality itself, to directly provide project management of this initiative. We will be providing staff support from here and staying very close to it, but they will provide the day-to-day direction for it. And they will do the procurement associated with finding the consultant, for example. And then they will ensure that the deliverables are delivered to us as outlined in this scope document. So with that said, that requires a couple of things. First of all, it requires us to enter into an agreement with them so that we are ensured that we're getting exactly what we're looking for from them. And secondly, it requires us to transfer that grant funding to them to manage, and that will be fully outlined and detailed in the agreement that would be signed with them. So that results in the two related recommendations that are provided in the staff report. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Councilor Goff.
Yeah, thanks very much for this staff report. The power bills, the RecPlex are extreme. And will one of the findings hopefully be sort of a determination of how much we could save by going through this process, an estimate thereabouts?
Yes, they're doing a return on investment calculation so that they can help us to determine what we can actually save with the various investments that they'll be recommending.
There being no more questions, Do you have two recommendations for us?
Yes, I do. First, the council recommend approval for the CAO to be authorized to enter into an agreement with Clean Foundation to provide project management and oversight for this project.
Councilor O'Connell?
I'll second.
Councilor Tebow, all those in favor?
Aye.
That recommendation is approved. Do you have another one?
I do, Warden. For council to approve transferring all Low Carbon Communities Program grant funding received by the municipality as part of this project to Clean Foundation to manage.
I'll make that recommendation.
Deputy Warden Malloy?
I'll second.
Councilor O'Connell, all those in favor?
Aye.
That motion, recommendation is approved. Okay, sorry. Invitation for strengthening municipal partnership, John, St. Evex. Did you all get this email?
Yes.
You did get the Reddit?
Yes.
Does anybody want to go?
I can't because I have meetings and.
We have fire services.
Yeah.
Fire services. Do all three of us have to be?
Well, two of you. Two of us, right? It has to be at fire services.
I mean, if I will attend if it's okay. I mean, if we would like somebody to be there.
Could be interesting to find out what they have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry to.
Yeah.
I would like to attend. It's interesting, but I'm unsure, like, it's just with some things with school, I'm unsure, but could we approve somebody to go or a couple people? Then maybe if something happened, I couldn't go, maybe Dana, or maybe we both get, or something, right? It'd be better, I think.
The approval basically just covers mileage if you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't say you have to go.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll work with you.
Yeah.
You go, and if you can.
Oh, both of you can go.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Go ahead.
Warden, we could then have a motion, a recommendation that council recommend attendance by up to two members of council with mileage expense to be reimbursed for those attending as agreed by council consensus. And then the next meeting of council is May 20th, and this event is on May 27th, so it could be deferred, but at least then we get the recommendation on the agenda of council for the next meeting, if you'd like.
I will make that recommendation.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Councilor Tebow, all those in favor of two members of council to be determined, attendance, mileage expense reimbursed for those attending. All those in favor?
Aye.
That is approved. It's 17:59 hours. To entertain that motion to go in camera.
I'll make that.
Councilor Tebow, Councilor O'Connell, in favor?
Aye.
To go in camera. So. On the motion of Councilor O'Connell, seconded by Councilor Tebow, we are back in open session. And this being the end of the agenda, the meeting is adjourned at 18:15 hours.